She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network.
Into dreams you've done all that you can. I'll hold you here in the dawn, sunset in your country, sunrise in mine. Lay down your body, feel mine begin to rise. Sunset in my country, sunrise in yours. I feel you there in the dawn. Forces facing us are terrible indeed. My hope may flicker in the night, but in the morning I will plant another seed, and while you sleep it seeks the light.
Okay, everybody. So what a start to this show. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm kind of lost in translation. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and you are definitely indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And how exciting it is for me, and I hope for all of you, that for the first time ever, we have a songwriter on the show. And someone who is so much more than that. She is an artist with a mission, and she writes songs with powerful messages. And I can't wait to start my interview with you, Libby Roderick, and talk about food for the soul, music. So thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy to be here with you.
It's great. So, and I always do a shout out to our sponsor in the beginning of the show, the Fairfax Companies, who are true leaders in the business of sustainability. They are dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices. And when it comes to commercial waste, of which there is quite a bit, Fairfax sets precedence for the rest of the industry by demonstrating so much is possible when it comes to recycling materials that are normally disposed of in construction and demolition, saving things from the landfill. We appreciate them. We appreciate all the work they do for our community and for our planet. So thank you, Fairfax. Libby, that song, as you know, was Cradle of Dawn. And if it's okay with you, I just want to kind of set the stage for how you came to be on the show and what that song meant to me. If we can take a minute with my time,
because please.
I wanted to make it all about you. So I am at the Center for Compassion Studies at the University of Arizona, invited by my friend Leslie Langbert, who's the executive director there. And it was the day of the Climate March. And another incredible human being walked into my life, Kathleen Dean Moore. And she was invited, I think it was my friend Molly said, do you want to go to that before we go to the march? So I thought, you know, it's a lecture, but it's okay. Well, it was not what I was expecting at all. We get in the room. It was shortly after the Women's March. And it was, it's a very difficult time for those of us that believe we're fighting the good fight in many arenas. And we care deeply about the planet, about climate change, about social justice. So we get in this room and Kathleen, with her very gentle voice, says, I bet most of you are weary. And I start crying right off the bat. I'm like, I am so tired. And she says, these are challenging times and there are many more challenges to come. So why don't we start off with a song? And she proceeds to play Cradle of Dawn, which everyone just heard in the intro, and I did not cry. I wept. I didn't make noise. I didn't make a scene, but it was like this big release of, yes, I'm tired, but there's someone over in Australia or someplace that's saying, Gina, go to sleep. It's okay. I'm here. I'm on the other side of the world. I've got your back. And it may sound really strange, but I had this incredible sense of relief. It's like, you are so not alone. Don't be so egotistical. There are lots of people wanting to save the planet, preserve the planet, do the right thing. So that's my tribute to you. It was just like, I literally had, the tears were tears of joy and relief and anguish and all of that rolled into one. So that's how I was introduced to Libby Roderick. And then didn't I come home and write you this like exuberant email about, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I was very, very passionate about the impact you had. So thank you for doing that for me.
You are so welcome.
Now let's make it all about you. I always like to know a little bit about people's journey. And what was your journey into becoming a songwriter and a poet and an activist? Tell us a little bit about the background and the beginnings of Libby Roderick.
Oh, wow. Well, born and raised and still living in Alaska, and so my beginning years, I was aware of the fact that humans are supported by our living systems, right? That we aren't at the top of the food chain.
Right.
Where I live, it's very clear that there are bears. And if you don't behave yourself and be mindful and aware of your relationships with other creatures, four-leggeds, two-leggeds, winged, you know, swimming and so forth, that at least up here, you are put in your place, right? You really need to know your place in every sense of the word. And so I had that great good fortune. You know, all of us, those early imprints are so formative, right, of how we see the world, where we see our role in it, what we think we're doing here, really. And for me, at least, that was a very foundational aspect of my early life, was where I am in the web of life. Right, and I'm a small part, I'm an important part, I'm an integral part, but I'm surely not at the top of some kind of pyramid, right? I'm connected in to this broader web of relations with salmon and with spruce trees and with wind and with waters and with our indigenous peoples and with white folks and with, you know, with the whole bit. So that was one piece. The indigenous cultures around us, I was fortunate to be in a family where, you know, I am a pink person, as I say. I'm white, right?
Right.
I come from Welsh and British background. But I was fortunate in that my folks, you know, the extent to which people who look like me are impacted by racism is kind of a matter of good or bad luck as children. You get really impacted by the people around you. And I was lucky to have a lighter dose in the sense that my parents honored our Alaska Native cultures and peoples at a level that many folks who look like us don't.
Right.
And so I was able to connect throughout my young life and into my young adulthood and so forth with the extraordinary genius of indigenous ways of organizing human societies. And obviously, right, they put our living systems and our natural relations at the center. Again, that whole idea of where we fit was pretty primal in that regard for me as well. So so that's one piece of the background. And I think because of the Alaska I grew up in, we didn't have very many of the American institutions. I didn't even know I was an American until I was a sophomore in college. I can remember the moment when that dawned on me.
You're kidding.
No,
that's
no.
Awesome.
It was an electrifying moment.
Oh,
I was studying
I'm an American.
For an American studies exam. Yeah. And it was like, boom, and suddenly a lot of things came clear, and I had to figure a whole bunch of other things out. But And the reason I'm saying that is because we really didn't have very many people up here. I mean, Alaska is a very vast landscape, right? It's huge. And so the ratio of people to wild lands was pretty dramatically in the direction of wildlands when I was a child, right?
So, right, right.
So we didn't have very many institutions, right? There isn't the same class. It's a mostly working class state. There weren't a lot of wealthy people. The school systems were not heavy-handed. My family did not, as it happens, attend a church. There were a lot of ways in which my natural connection, anybody's natural connection, every child's natural connection to the world was not interfered with, I guess I'd say.
Right.
Was not shaped, molded, and guided in a particular direction. So in some ways, I'm not really an American in the same way that many people are, and our native folks say the same, of course, that we just were raised kind of outside of that particular paradigm. So that's some foundational pieces. The music piece, and as a result, I've had an unorthodox career path because, again, Alaska's been an unusual starting point. So I just kind of followed my heart and my passion and sense of connection. And I think it's integral to most people also that it's inherent that you wish to love and serve if it's not schooled out of you in a way by disconnection and hyper-individualism and, you know, people telling right. you you're supposed to be a doctor or something, right. you know, or whatever people do. So that was allowed to be retained, and I sort of staggered into the musical world. My family loved music. We didn't do it formally, but that love was honored, I guess I'd say, and I kind of followed my own love for music. I had no plans to tour. I had no plans to record. I had no plans to be a songwriter, actually. And when it was first
well, there you
me,
go.
I thought it was a horrible Jeez. Idea. Yeah. So it sort of evolved naturally. And, I mean, I can tell you more about that if you're interested. But that wasn't something I expected to be doing. In fact, I was painfully shy, and I really resisted the idea of having to tour, and particularly tour in the lower 48 states, because I thought, whoa, this is way over my head. But I put out several recordings. It was a very difficult experience for me because we didn't have much musical support up here at that level at that time. And then it kind of took off on its own. And so then I had to decide whether to go for it or not, and decided to go ahead, and we built a record label and, you know, sort of went from there.
And sort of went from there, but it was a lot of the journey and so many things that you said about the forces of nature. One of the things that struck me in preparing for the show and drilling down a bit deeper was, let's take the song Cradle of Dawn. I figured you wrote that in like 2013 because it's about climate change. Well, when I found out that you wrote it in, I think, 1989, so what forces were facing us then? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, I can tell you exactly what happened with that one, and it will resonate, I think, because you and I'm sure most of the people on the line, if not all of them, are probably similarly open-hearted around life and what's happening. And so in that case, we are pained. We are profoundly pained by much of what's occurring. That song happened after the 1989 oil spill in Valdez, Alaska.
Oh, wow.
The Exxon Valdez oil spill.
Oh, gosh. And, okay.
Yeah, right. And I was so horrifically impacted by that that I was unable to sleep. I would be flooded with images of oiled otters and eagles and the people down there, and I knew what was going on. I'm sure most of the people listening are somewhat familiar with that. We just had a colossal, colossal oil spill in an extraordinary water body in Alaska, south central Alaska, that horrifyingly impacted not only an amazing amount of marine life, but also a lot of the Alaska Native villages in the area.
And catastrophic, yes, and awful, yes.
Right, all the people who rely on fishing for their living, and it was astonishing. And I found myself so overwhelmed by horror, I guess I would say.
Yes.
That I couldn't function, and I would find myself curled up in the bathtub, right, or something, or unable to sleep. And luckily, I already had connections with a stunning human being who I'm sure most of your folks know, called Joanna Macy.
Oh my gosh, you are kidding.
Okay. I know Joanna.
Oh
and
my gosh. Yeah.
And so she had told the story, which I hope I repeat reasonably faithfully, that she had been a professor of comparative religion at UC Berkeley in the, 60s, 70s, whatever, and had one day found herself behind her desk, curled up in the fetal position. And as I like to say from the stage, she even knew that this was not the fast track to tenure. And that she,
indeed not.
Right, wasn't going to get her anywhere fast in terms of the career path. So she luckily realized that her what was happening to her was not a psychological disorder. It was a sign of her connectedness to our living Earth and then all the human and non-human communities that are on it, right? That she was feeling the pain of the world because she was connected, because her heart was open, because she was a loving, caring human being that had not been interfered with to the point where she was numb. So she rose up from that experience and, in some form or fashion, took that to create the work that was then called Despair and Empowerment Work, which she took around the world to Chernobyl and other places.
Right.
And now she calls it the work that reconnects. And so I knew when I found myself in a similar position, fortunately, because she had shared that story publicly, that I wasn't the first person who'd had a response like this, and that it meant what it meant, which is that I am that deeply connected, as many people are, and as all children are, I really believe this, that they just get interfered with, to the rest of our relations, right? And so I was experiencing this horror show because it's a horror show, not because something's wrong with me. But what she did in her work was, obviously the point of this is not that we all stay in that state, because that isn't useful to us or anybody, but knowing that we are all profoundly connected, knowing that that is a signal of how deeply you care and are connected, that it's not something the matter with you. And it's like you said earlier, it's nothing individual. We're all connected, right?
Right,
this is
right.
About all of us. That I was then able to actually write that song as a way of helping my own self remobilize by realizing that I'm not I am not the only person in this game. There are so many people moving on these fronts. We don't hear about them all the time, but I think it's Paul, you'll know who I mean. He wrote, it's not called Great Tide Rising. There's another book that was written that documents the fact that this effort, this worldwide effort to protect our Earth, is the largest movement ever in the human species. And that there are just so many people who are moving in small and large ways, many of whom we don't hear about because they don't get that much press coverage. But anyway, I knew that there were people, I actually knew people in Australia, John Seed among them, one of Joanna Macy's.
I don't know why I thought of Australia, but I thought that's all the other side of the world for me. And I literally thought there is someone there that is really holding the light up while I sleep. And I have gone to bed with that thought. I mean, that hopefully for your work, it's so affirming that how many years later this song walked into my life and I need protection. I need healing. I need somebody to soothe my soul. And there it was. acknowledging all of it. So believe it or not, this is just going to drive me crazy. We might be doing a two-hour show. We're coming up on the first break. And we didn't even answer all the songs on the first song. But anyway, when we come back, everybody, listen carefully. We're going to come back with a song that is a perfect segue to this. And it's called Low to the Ground. There are lots of great messages in it. And they are related to the environment and keeping ourselves low to the ground. It's another magical song for us. And we are here watching yet again time fly with a great guest, Libby Roderick, songwriter, singer, recording artist, poet, activist, and teacher indeed. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back for more delightful and inspirational chatting.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
We stand on the edge of a cliff in the deepest night I've ever seen. People looking for light, people who cherish a dream. But the light shining out from our eyes, and the dreams resting deep in our souls. It's magic we're needing to keep us from falling. It's magic we already know. It's music that keeps us alive. It's dancing that sets our hearts free. Children remember the laughter in life. It's animals teach us to see. Stay low to the ground. Live close to the earth. Don't stray very far from your soul. It's simple things show us the reason we're here, and it's simple things keeping us whole.
Hey, everybody, we stand on the edge of a cliff in the deepest night I've ever seen. And again, I want to, Libby, I want to go back to the Cradle of Dawn because it's connected to this one, I think, as well. Is you say in that song, another line that got me, we need a quiet place to let our spirits be, somewhere that we are safe from harm. So to me, that means keeping it low to the ground, staying connected in nature. Is that one of the big takeaways for this song about really now more than ever getting some laser sharp focus about connection to Mother Earth? I mean, I of course am Mrs. Green, so every song that you had for me is a connection to Mother Earth and love of all of its inhabitants and its creatures and all of that. So talk to me about nature since you are in Alaska facing the bears.
Okay, there's a lot in all of what you just said.
There's a lot. And I do that, and it's like, it's how my brain is like, okay, we've got to, but the connection to nature is really the big strand here that I think is so important to get across to people.
Yes. Well, so I, you know, there's so many ways to go here, but our connection to Mother Earth or to the Earth or to whatever words people use for the life systems that support us and surround us, of which we are a part, is, in my opinion, our primary relationship, right? I mean, people talk about their primary relationship being with their partner or with their families, but actually our original relationship is to the earth. And again, luckily, our indigenous cultures have not lost sight of that. We live in a bubble, right? Particularly if your listeners are listening through the lens of the U.S., but any of the industrialized nations, right? We're living in an unusual anomaly in the history of ever, in the last set of even decades, of hyper-consumerism, hyper-individualism, extreme disconnection from the earth, an economy that runs at a pace that's crazy, right? And this kind of focus on protecting ourselves by getting as much money together as we can, you know, having as much control over other people as we can, just an effort to try to control the vulnerabilities of being alive on the planet in these various ways. And as we are pretty much all beginning to realize in the process, we're putting life itself at risk, or at least the species that we know and love. And so getting back to that, as I say, I believe every child is born with that in her or him. But many, many children these days are not born with the opportunity to really have that relationship, whether it's because they're in an urban environment where their only quote-unquote natural life is, you know, a couple trees here and there or a little patch of ground somewhere, or because they're not educated. You can go through your whole educational system and never realize that everything you have other than the sun comes from Mother Earth. I mean, that everything we have.
Right? Everything. Everything, you know, people. Right. It's like ring the bell. Hello.
Right?
Everything.
Completely dependent.
Source of life.
Right. And the health of the waters and the weather is our health, and that we won't go on without her. I mean, which is in another song that I've got a new CD out with a number of songs that are pertinent to this, and that's in my mind. But so we, you know, that disconnection that most of us have suffered from reality is really what it is. Isn't our fault. Children aren't born into this world thinking, oh, I hope I, you know, am split off from the most important things in the world.
Right.
It's difficult for many people because of the conditioning to experience that connection. I do a lot of work with a colleague on indigenous ways of teaching and learning, and we always start everything we do by sending people outside to be quiet outside for a while and just to begin the process of allowing your senses to remember, you know, like, what's the wind feel like? What's the air temperature feel like? What am I hearing? Are there birds out here? You know, what's underneath my feet? You know, where are the critters around me, even if they're just insects or something, right? Just to begin,
connection.
There is almost no encouragement in an ordinary day for an ordinary person to remember our home, basically. So when you talk about that connection, it's the source, it's the center, and for many of us, you know, it probably feels like trying to relearn Hebrew or a language we lost a long time ago, right? Somewhere back there. And so being gentle, I think, with ourselves as we try to get that in our bodies, like, what does that mean? Because I think people hear it and they know it, but it's difficult to get it, right? Because everything around us pushes us towards consumerism, pushes us towards efficiency and productivity and technology and, you know, all these other things, buying stuff and hurrying up. Reconnecting first with your own body, right? That's why so many practices involve breathing and slowing down and that sort of thing. But the truth of the matter is that we are dependent upon our lands, waters, and creatures. In fact, they are not really dependent upon us.
Right. And, you know, in the song, it's children remember the laughter in life. It's animals teach us to see. Stay low to the ground. Live close to the earth. Don't stray very far from your soul. And once again, I have to reflect that you wrote that song in 1991. Fast forward to 2017, some of the biggest challenges that my friends who have kids that are 5, 7, 10 are not even like get out in nature, what a joke, getting them off their
That's right.
They're gizmos. I just call them gizmos because it's this, you know, all-encompassing term. And my show producer, Kelly King, is a perfect example. She's winning that battle because there wasn't a choice. Her kids are restricted to 1 hour a day, and that's it. And it's outside. It's entertain yourselves. There's no, you know, mechanical device. But the fact that you wrote that song, 1991, it's timeless. Its message is more important now than ever. Go out in the streams. They fed us. You know, the winds carry the seed. So I couldn't tell you the feeling I had when I heard that, because my parents kept us low to the ground. And it was a part of our upbringing. And they made sure that nature was a part of us from the minute we were born. So, you know, thank them for that.
You lucked out.
I lucked out, and it's harder now. Let's be honest.
Yes, much harder.
It's much harder.
Little piece of information for parents, if you need a bit of validation on that point, is that as far as I know, Bill and Melinda Gates send their children to schools that do not involve technology.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. What? I did not know that. And how encouraging is that? I think they've kept their feet to the ground in terms of the impact that they're having. And segue into, it's the one of the most fascinating things for me in researching this was being shocked at when you wrote the songs, because, you know, I just discovered Libby Roderick. Now I want everybody to know who she is. But there is a song that got you lots of attention that was, you were on Anderson Cooper, 360, CBS 60 Minutes, I believe. Mm-hmm. And again, Libby, how could anyone... This is the song I didn't pick it as one of them because I was in the, you know, more the climate change theme, but so much of climate change is about social justice. It's one of the legs on which I stand, but it's about how could anyone tell you were anything less than beautiful? What chord did that strike when you wrote it about what was going on then? And look at what's happening now. A kid got lynched the other day. A biracial child got lynched. So yeah, how could anyone?
Right. Well, just because it might make it easier for your folks, I will just sing it. It's four lines. It's very simple.
Please do. Oh, yes, I was hoping you would sing on the radio. All my dreams are coming true with Libby Roderick. Okay.
It's very simple. It's just four lines. How could anyone ever tell you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply, I put it way down there, you're connected to my soul.
Oh, really? And I said I wasn't going to cry on the show, so you talk now. It's like, listen to the beauty of that song and the importance of the message now, today, right this minute. So go, what inspired you then, and look at it now.
Well, yeah, I mean, this has been an interesting phenomenon in my life. It's gone around the world. We get constant mail and messages from people how they're using it in some extraordinarily beautiful ways for healing and for reconnecting and for all kinds of things in prisons and in children's orphanages and in Alzheimer's clinics and in cancer clinics, and it goes on and on. But it's interesting. I mean, I wrote it in 88. I wrote it in response to somebody I dearly loved calling me on the phone and was weeping about themselves, it was clear that they felt very badly about themselves, and I knew how wonderful they are and how much they had worked to try to recover from injuries that had happened to them in their lives, and I was just, I mean, it was a 5-minute song, just sat down, picked up a guitar, and wrote those lines, and what then it went out into the world and has had this extraordinary journey. And what I've learned from that is a couple things. One is how starved we are to have people reflect back to us how remarkably wonderful we are. I mean, that people, I believe this strongly, children are born inherently loving, they care, they're connected, they're creative. They want things to go well for themselves and the world. They are inherently merciful. They have the potential to go other directions, but all those things are built in. And at the same time, what I learned, so that people are hungry to be reminded of who they really are, and they're hungry because the world is forever whacking them, right? And telling them that they are bad, they are stupid, they are worthless, nobody cares about them, they're disconnected, who gives a rip? They are, because of racism or sexism or homophobia or disability oppression or ageism, or you fill it in, fat, thin, too much money, too little, you know, whatever, right?
Yes. Fill in the blank of what I don't like about you. I mean,
right.
Yes.
And we live in an oppressive society where groups of people, as you mentioned this child, groups of people are horrifically targeted by violence and injustice, and we're seeing, of course, more and more of it in recent times, which is very, very painful and frightening to so many people. And so that song happens to combine recognition of both of those things, right? How could anyone ever do this to you? That
right.
You're,
there's an indignance. There is an indignance.
Are, right?
Yes. How could anybody do that to you? Yes.
Right. It's wrong. And we all know it's wrong. And we know it's wrong when it happens, comes our way. And we know it's wrong when it comes to other people. And the connection with particularly activism and trying to assist us to mobilize to save our own lives in terms of the climate emergency, among other environmental challenges, is that people who feel horrible about themselves or even bad about themselves or even very self-doubting or disconnected or like they're on the wrong end of racism or the other isms are immobilized in many ways, are disabled. We don't tend to act with confidence on behalf of what we love. We don't feel certain that we can stand up and say this is wrong and we refuse to allow it to occur. We don't necessarily reach for the child who really needs a hand because we're too focused on our own pains and challenges and difficulties and wanting to set up a comfort zone for ourselves, just for ourselves, because we are having a hard time, right? So those things go together, where if the human race can't get that it is inherently good,
right, right, yes,
then it stops us. Because I teach from the stage all the time, love is, in my opinion, the most underutilized political force in the world.
And I was going to ask you about that, because I heard that in maybe the Bioneers presentation. Talk about that. It's an underutilized force. Who says that, Libby? You. Love
well,
as
I
an
do.
Under, yes, you do. And
well, because we don't use the term often because people misunderstand it as, you know, people use that term in so many different ways.
Right, right.
It can sound, you know, like a Hallmark thing or like a wishy-washy thing or like a, you know, but love, which is your connection to the world through the heart, your experience, in my opinion, of the extraordinary beauty and, you know, just stunning remarkableness of even being here in the first place, that it is good, right? It is,
right, right.
It is good to be here, and we are good to be here. Love comes through the heart. The heart is the source of courage. The word courage means heart. And we protect what we love. If we don't love something or at least care about it, we don't mobilize to protect it, whether it's a child or a river or, like I've said before, a culture or an art form or, you know, or the world itself, the beautiful earth systems entire that support us. If we can't feel that heartfelt connection of warmth and, you know, and well, I think most people resonate with the term love, that they felt something like that, then we don't. You know, there's so much competing for our energy, right? There's so many demands on people. There's so many stresses. Life has never been easy. It's one of the myths, I think, of this bubble we've been living in, that somehow if you just make enough money and do enough meditation and eat the right foods,
you're going to be happy. Here's nirvana right here on earth.
Right?
It is just not the right story to be telling yourself. You're right.
Well, and I don't,
you're absolutely
I don't think
right.
The moose aren't out there having an easy go of it. Nothing is, right? This planet is not made for our convenience.
Yeah, and neither are the wolves. I was going to ask you if you could please write a song about wolves, because that's my latest passion.
Nice. Well, maybe
the
I
wolves.
Will, right?
Oh, man, there's another story.
So I emphasize love as a political force because I think it is where the juice comes from, to keep finding the courage, to keep finding the energy, to weep our way through if we must. I wanted to speak to that, that I have had for 35 years at least, people I set time up with in listening partnerships and other formats to allow us to, and this is what Joanna Macy's work in Despair and Empowerment was about, to feel our feelings about how hard it can be to keep your heart open, to keep moving from love, to keep loving and acting in a loving way, regardless of the what you encounter, which is often harsh, it's sometimes violent, it's very painful oftentimes, to let ourselves express our feelings, right? We sob, we rage about things, we, you know, people quiver when they've been in something that's been really scary for them. They people do whatever they need to do, right, to share the emotional experience of being alive on the planet now with things as hard as they are so that we can keep acting in love. And that is often a very courageous thing. It's not a namby-pamby thing, right?
It's not a namby thing. And hold that thought. We're going to come back to dancing in front of the guns, which will give you hope. And it's a perfect segue to what Libby has been talking about. Please, everybody, stay here with me. Get ready for time to fly even faster.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Facing the guns again, we have faced them before. Humanity's longing after so many deaths, something more human than war. But part of me whispers, take your body and run away. Leave the vision to somebody else, and I hear myself say, but I'd rather be dancing at the edge of my grave. I'd rather be holding you close as we march forward, loving and brave. I'd rather be singing in the face of my fear. I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns as long as I'm here.
Okay, everybody, once again, I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being a part of it. Today, we're talking about food for the soul music, and I certainly can say it has touched my soul yet again. Joining us for this hour is American singer, songwriter, recording artist, poet, and activist, and teacher, Libby Roderick. Libby touches people's soul. Her music inspires, it ignites, it soothes, and it educates. And those words came from inside of me. It wasn't something I read in her bio. It's like, what did this woman's music do for me? And who among us has not had music get us through some of the darkest of times and provided us with memories for some of the best of times? So there is something for everyone in the magical music of Libby Roderick. And Libby, it is wonderful to have you here. And I hope we have a little time to talk about Rosa, because that's another one. And just a funny sidebar, I do walk every morning for about 2.5 miles, and you should see me. I look in front of me and I look in back of me. And when this one comes on about dancing in front of the guns, man, I let it rip and I sing and I dance and I feel like I'm marching. So it's like, it is definitely food for the soul. And again, I'm going to reiterate, you wrote that song in 1991. What guns were out then? Because we've rolled them out again. Here we are, 2017. The guns are out again.
We seem to have some perpetual
patterns.
Perennial problems. Yes, we do. The human race has some challenges. That happened after the countdown to the Iraq War. Do you remember?
Kidding.
Some
yes,
of you will remember that we literally counted down the days to when we started bombing another country. And I was invited to sing at a rally for a peace prior to that happening. And what I looked around for music that I felt I could made sense to share in that context, and I really just didn't find any. And so that's when I wrote that song as an offering for that particular rally. And the concept really was that, as you say, you know, we're facing the guns again. We have faced them before, right? This is a cyclical, perennial human challenge that people have wrestled with since the beginning of time, is that there are forces in our species that are very aggressive, sometimes very greedy, often very violent. And how do we respond? And so, you know, throughout time, some folks, particularly people with a commitment to love and spirituality and a different vision of what's possible, have held up the idea that we cannot respond in kind, that violence, answering violence with violence, leaves you with more violence. And so that song was really to encourage us to find the courage to both meet that violence with an alternative vision, and also to have a little fun while we're in this long haul marathon of trying to transform the human race into some body of creatures that, you know, supports the flourishing life on the planet for everyone, which is a long game. And I know that as a person who's been at this, you know, I wrote it a long time ago, and as you say, things have gotten more acute, particularly for those of us who've been living a bit more in the bubble, right? I mean, there are people all over the world that have been in this forever, right? But we are now in it as well, and if we weren't before. And so one of the things that's a truism about activism is that people have to nurture ourselves as we go through, right? And you're flagging one of the big sources, which is music. Music has this extraordinary capacity, which has been documented scientifically, if you need that kind of thing, that singing alone brings out on endorphins, serotonin, oxytocin, you know, the healing, soothing, nurturing aspects, bodily, physical, physiological aspects for us personally. And if you sing in a collective, you get even more benefits. The bonding hormones bond us to other people, our heartbeats synchronize. I mean, it's a whole bonding, survival, pro-cooperation mechanism. That's one thing. Sharing food together, dancing, you know, having, laughing, you know.
Yeah, being in community with other people.
Totally.
It is the soul feeder.
Yes. And particularly the harder things get, and let's say it, it's pretty darn hard right now. I mean, it was hard back then.
It's ugly,
you know,
out there.
But
yes.
Something else is that we need to kind of ramp that up for everybody as best we can. And so one of the models we have that I really like where I'm living is about every month we have a sort of resistance gathering, and it builds in all those elements. There's some lovely people organizing it that make sure we share food. Then I've been doing the music for it, but anywhere, you know, any music at the beginning, then we have somebody come in and speak, give information, whether that information is on what's happening with public lands or healthcare or women's rights or the climate crisis, or one person came in to talk about sustaining ourselves through this level of stress. What are some practices to use? Then we have question and answers. Then we have more music. Then we have more fellowship and food. And it's a great, and then we have an action. I said I wouldn't do this if they didn't
build
an action.
What's the call to action? Right.
Absolutely. So, and it's made easy for people. There are postcards there. There are petitions there. There are ways to donate. There are ways to volunteer. So that each time we get together, we feed the soul, we nurture the body, we have that community, we get some new information, we take an action so we know we're getting somewhere and we're making a difference, and then we do it again.
And it feeds the soul. I mean, it's just, and the song, in that song, what it says to me is, I love the vulnerability part when you said, I'd rather take my body and run away, because
right.
I do feel like that. And then you read it, And I'm singing it, and I'd say no, but I'd rather be dancing. And, you know, about the marches, this is a great march song because all of the marches I've been in, the past three that I've been in, were the total marches for my entire life, and I am not alone.
Yeah.
They're happy. People are, they're not angry, they're not yelling, they're not shouting. One of the ones that the women's march, there was a little boy, and it's chanting, but we were saying, no hate, no fear, everyone is welcome here. And I was walking next to this adorable little boy, and I looked at him, and I put out my hand, and he held my hand. And we sang that song. I didn't know, but he was so happy, and he smiled when I looked at him. And I said, let's do this. But that's the kind of thing that... It is dancing in front of the guns. And look at the people that are in front of the bulldozers, the indigenous people and the fight they're doing. But it's not coming from a place of anger. It isn't. It's love.
That's right.
Yeah. It's marches it's not protesting against. So
that's right. And singing together, think the civil rights movement, think apartheid, anti-apartheid movement, actually gives people that joy, partly, and that courage to hold their ground in ways that they... might not otherwise. Before I forget, just because of the nature of this show, let me offer a chant that I wrote for those marches that might be useful to you all. It goes like this, because I don't have any other great ways of getting this out there, but we will protect our climate and our oceans so that all the other struggles may go on.
Be waiting for this one. I'm not kidding either. My listeners will be so inspired and ignited and touched by this. And we only have about 10 minutes left, but again, it's you're connecting us to Mother Earth. You're encouraging us to be out in nature. And the other part, I wanted to talk a little bit about a clip that I listened to over and over, and I think it was maybe at Bioneers or another YouTube video, you talked about a quote from a Tibetan nun who talked about original sin versus the original soft spot, and I love that, and how that soft spot can misguide us. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a love message that matters. Do you know what I mean? It really is. What is our original soft spot, and how can it misguide us?
Well, and I can't remember which Tibetan nun said it, but it's one of the ones that I think many people are familiar with, maybe Pema Chodron or someone like that. What she was saying is that people think we are born into original sin, and in fact, we are born with original soft spot. And what I took it to mean is we're vulnerable. All of us are.
Yes.
And on many levels, right? Emotionally, physically, socially, you know, and... we know it. I think in our wiring is that awareness that we are vulnerable creatures. And in every other culture throughout history, I'd say, I mean, I keep referring to hyper-individualism in the U.S. and in other industrialized nations, but particularly in the U.S., people feel alone. People are alone in many ways, you know, in our culture. We have lost that sense of we-ness, us-ness, you know, collective, that we're in it together, right? That we have a tribe or tribes or that we're all family and all that. We say it, but we don't feel it often enough. And so people are aware that they are vulnerable. And so when people feel vulnerable and they feel threatened or afraid, we act weirdly. Let's just say it. Right? All of us. We get defensive. We can become greedy. We begin... saying things to other people that we might not otherwise say if we felt safe, if we felt connected, if we knew they cared about us and we cared about them, if we knew we were responsible to them. We toss things away into the landscape partly because we don't realize that it impacts other people in future generations, present generations, birds. You know, we've just lost that sense of being an us, you know, a we. And so
it's really separation, not connection, and community. I mean, and look what's happened as a result. We're not doing things together. We're building fences and pulling our shades down and making sure there's curtains. And all of those things are, to me, are reflective of the lack of connection.
Right. And I think the original meaning of sin, if people dig into it, means something like off the mark, right? And so I think, what she's getting at is just that underneath the hurtful behavior, the weird behavior, the scary behavior of us and other people is this vulnerability. And that if we can begin to honor that in ourselves, recognize it in others, reach for them maybe when they're in the midst of some frightening behavior, as opposed to clobber them further, I think that's what she was speaking to. And so the song, How Could Anyone, really is, you know, speaking to that.
Right. And when it comes to, we're definitely not going to get time to talk about Rosa, which I'm hoping if you have a new album coming out or if it's been released recently, that there'll be a repeat performance with Libby Roderick. And the fact that you sang is such an honor to all of us and our listeners. Mm. And I thank you for that. But what about just a philosophical question about music in general and some observations you might have made? You touched on them a little bit. Why does it touch so many lives? Why does it matter so much to sing and to have songs in our heart? Who doesn't stop in their tracks when you hear John Lennon sing Imagine? I am a dreamer. I write about it in my newsletters. People say that I'm a dreamer. And the next line is more important, but I'm not the only one. What does it touch in us that's so basic? You know, a lot of kids were born crying. My kids weren't because they were born at home. But we have to talk about, what is it that it's magical? It is food for the soul.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the big mystery. It's one of the big mysteries. I've thought about it a lot because of many interviews, right, where we talk about kind of things. And I mean, it goes everything from, as you say, wolf packs, right, that howl together in the night, babies that cry, and then you extend that into perhaps a song. You can think about it as we're sort of like tuning forks, you know, that the world is filled with frequencies and vibrations, and we are in that field, and music is, you know, sort of playing the instrument of your body in many ways. But there's something, I remember I stumbled on a textbook once, and it was so simplistic, and everybody else had probably known it but me, but I saw it, and it said, you know, music is the language of the emotions, and it was like, you know, so of course we don't have very many things, particularly again in this culture, that speak right to the heart as opposed to the brain first or only. And so there's something about music that speaks to the integrated human being. I mean, so that it's emotional, it's physical, it's spiritual, it's intellectual, all at the same time, it's vibrational, all at the same time. And we crave, I think, the spirit, that the feeling of wholeness. There's something about music, I think, that gives us a feeling and a sense, an embodied experience of being integrated.
Which
we often don't experience. And then there is a connection with others. Like I said, if you sing with others, or if you're playing with others, or if you're in the presence of an orchestra, or you're in the presence of a band, where they're creating a field, an integrated, whole, holistic field that speaks to every level of your being, physical, emotional, like I said, right? It's hitting every part of your being. So there's something about the feeling of wholeness.
And that soothes just the way you said it. It's so true. And I think about movies that make me smile no matter what, and I have the whole album downloaded on my phone. The Big Chill. I don't even remember what that movie was about. What I remember is a bunch of friends coming together, singing and dancing and stopping what they were doing. And to me, that movie was about music. And my kids and my grandkids love that music because it's timeless, and we'll put it on when we're doing stuff in the kitchen and start, you know, making believe we're playing the guitar. It just brings out a lot of joy.
Well, and it's also in the lyrics, there's poetry. Poetry is imagistic. I think there's a whole aspect of a human being that operates on a more basic level of image as opposed to word even.
Right.
So there's that as well.
There's that piece. So we have to get a promise from you on the air that you will come back someday, because I could talk about every one of those songs, and you gave me an hour of your time, and to keep us posted when you will be performing again, because I'm going to try to commit to that. I'm not going to, if it works out in my schedule and you go anywhere that's close to me, I'll make it, because it's become a bucket list thing. And, you know, I say it kind of as a goofy fan, but really as a consciously living being that times are tough for people, for empaths. Yes. People say, oh, indeed, you're such an empath. It's really hard. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. When you say you feel the pain of Mother Earth, I'm leaving for a trip to the rainforest in 3 weeks. And Mother Earth called me there the first time to start this, and she's calling me back. So just a little bit of, and I just want to know, did you say yes, you'll come back?
Yes, so, I'll come back.
Yes, she'll come back and sing. We should have you sing the entrance, the beginning. So October 5th, a great show with Jenny Grable, talking about What's Your Potential from Social Venture Network. And October 10th, Jim Beiser and Kathy Jacobs, Navigating Science to Action in a Post-Fact World. You will not want to miss this show. Libby Roderick, thank you for showing up in my life. And there's going to be lots of people that are listening that will say thank you too. Make it a great green day, everybody.